Hello, everyone. I would like to take over from something that Roshi talked about yesterday, that made me think, reflect. And so I will start from that and see how it unfolds. At some point, Roshi mentioned artists that were posted behind her, and mentioning that the fact that some of them had difficult lives, some of them even killed themselves. And we talked about the shadows, our shadows, people's shadows. And Roshi mentioned that it was an inspiration for her. That might seem paradoxical. How can that be an inspiration if these people end up killing themselves? Well, another question, another way to phrase it, the question that I was asking myself was, well, does it mean that creation, being creative, ends up by you having a life of misery and hell and distress? Someone then mentioned the fact that maybe the middle way is boring. So how does that work together? So I think that's what is that's the question that I would like to investigate, I think, with you today. And one of the things that came to mind for me was that I thought about the first discourse of the Buddha in the Deer Park, and at the end of that sutta, he has one of the disciples, or not disciples yet, but disciples to come to be, one of his friends that basically summarizes what he has heard, like the first discourse that Shakyamuni gave. And his name is Kondana, and he sums up what he understood by that very simple sentence. He said, "Whatever is subject to origination is all subject to cessation." Another way to say it is, whatever is an arising dharma, an arising phenomena, is a ceasing phenomena. To put it another way, is whatever arises ceases. I was listening to the radio the other day, and they were mentioning Amy Winehouse, how she died at the age of 27, how she was heartbroken and had all kinds of addictions. And then they played a song, and as soon as I heard the song, I was so powerful. There's something in her voice that I find so powerful. She experienced something as, or if, I mean, her or all the artists that were mentioned yesterday, or all the artists that we can think of, there is something in the creation that goes through, that is a translation, a manifestation of what is being experienced. So it arises, things arise. That's the first part. That's the first part of the equation. And yet also what has been experienced in Amy Winehouse's life and Jimi Hendrix and musicians and writers, and sometimes, as it was mentioned, they burn the candles by the two hands, by the two ends. There is a koan in the Shoryoroku, where at some point there's a monk that mentions the teaching of his teacher, and he wants to investigate whether the head monk understands it well. And basically asks him, his understanding, and he says, so that his teacher, Sekizo, said, go through, desist, and cease. Go through, desist, so let go, and cease. I feel this really, these three verbs condense a lot of what our practice is, and maybe that sheds a light also to what's going on. If we look at these artists, but also our own life, they really go through the creation, through their creation. They really express the whatever, the grief, the pain, the suffering, the hardship, the joy. Really a translation of an expression of what is being experienced. And so what happens next? As Kondana says, there's the second part of the equation is it arises and it also it ceases. So seeing that, and I feel this is the moment where it can become tricky, where we can get stuck. We go through, we experience something, and then we start to hold on to that experience. So if we go back to Amy Winehouse, I want that person back in my life. I really do want that, because otherwise it's hell. And we can think of other cases and cases in our life. So instead of desist, we hold on. We hold on and we hold on, and we don't let it go away. We don't let the phenomena following its path to cessation. We want to hold it back. And so when we do that, and I think a lot of some artists are a good illustration for that, it doesn't end up well in terms of how they end up their life or how they experience life. However, it doesn't, obviously it doesn't have to be that way. And I think this is what we're trying to experience by walking on this path. This desist and cease, that practice of letting go and cease. I think this is what this experience of not letting go and not letting go things and experience the seizing. Was the hindrance that ended up Shakyamuni in the first part of his life in a dead end, and he offers a different path. And what I feel is that it certainly doesn't lead to creativity, to an absence of creativity at the end of it. And I think Roshi's practice of writing, I think, is a very good example of how can we be creative by not holding on to any fixed ideas, by practicing that desist and seizing. That desisting, that letting go and seizing. was thinking what, yeah, when the art comes from a contemplative space in ourselves. And it reminded me that the aspect of the Eightfold Path is concentration, samadhi. Sometimes samadhi is translated, maybe it's even clearer. Instead of concentration, it's collectedness, what we collect ourselves. The opposite of collectedness could be when that collected is when it leaks, it flows, it goes all over the place. And that feeling that, yeah, we're not together, we're all over the place. It leaks all over the place. For the past 2 weeks, I've had some assignments, papers to hand in, and it was very difficult to gather myself, to be collected. I really wanted to avoid it. So I was doing all kinds of things in order not to do it. And in order to help me with that, I have this little app on my iPad where I try to monitor the time I spend on tasks, also because it's useful to know how to make my invoices. But it's also a way to help me to be to stay focused. And I can really feel in these moments like the difference of experience. Being concentrated, focused. Things don't leak all over the place. I'm there. And then something comes out and it's much easier to actually produce something. So, I don't know, all that to say that I feel that there's this middle path that we talked about yesterday, this practice, this cultivation of going through life, letting go, experiencing the ceasing, the disappearance. So in other words, embracing life, seeing the arising and seeing the ceasing. Certainly doesn't end our our experience of being heartbroken sometimes, or experiencing, yeah, sad events, tragic loss, or good stuff also, joyful moments. And it liberates something that also allows us to be creative. So it's not boring at all. It's the opposite of boring. Because it's much harder actually to go back to this first aspect, embracing life, going through life, if we get stuck with our fixed ideas, if we haven't emptied ourselves to cook, if the stuff from the previous meal is actually not washed and not, it's like the kitchen is not cleaned, it's cluttered. And from there we can be creative, but we can also be creative in a different way. So I feel there's a legacy, a fantastic legacy for all these from all these artists that had a terrible life, and it speaks to us, and it speaks to our shadow sides, as we talked about yesterday. And it's also an illustration also of the fact that when we don't let go, and when we don't see the seizing, how we end up in a dead end, and how it creates even more suffering. Another thread of thought that I've been thinking lately is, well, there's this this path of the middle way. So we can say, well, Shakyamuni experienced not the middle way before achieving the middle way. So maybe sometimes we have to go from there to reach to that experience of this is what is wholesome for us, for me. And I think in a way, this is what we all do. We do experience when we're not in the middle way. We do experience moments when we feel this is not good for us. This is not good for me. This doesn't help me to flourish. And I feel this is for myself, very something that I go back to, the question of, you know, what I'm doing right now. What does it do to me? I'm always very inspired by the this word that is being used in the sutras, the wholesomeness, something that is wholesome for us, something that has nothing to do with morality. It's just like, what helps me to actually flourish? And so we may not go to the extremes of some of we don't have necessarily to go to extremes to know that it's not wholesome, but sometimes this is what we experience, and we can, I feel this is a leverage point that we can start from, because where else to start anyway? This is our experience, in order to feel what is appropriate, what is and what is appropriate, what is wholesome, what makes me grow, what makes me flourish, what makes me connected. Also, I was thinking something was missing, and what is missing is that it's also a very relational quality that we're developing. I read recently a sutra where the king Pasenadi, who lived at the time of the Buddha and who was a great supporter of his sangha, he went to see Shakyamuni, and he said, "Well, you know, it's really astonishing why I come here. What I see is like really a sangha that is joyful, that people seem to get along." I was very touched by that because I feel this is also it's also another aspect of what is being sustained, is also our ability to connect and our ability to be together in a friendly manner. And again, that is enhanced by our ability to go through, desist, and seize. It's very confusing, this Zoom thing. Sometimes things pop up, people come and go. So sometimes it's on one page on my screen, sometimes it's on two pages. It's wonderful to practice together. Wherever we are, and whatever country we are sitting. And I think this is keep saying that I miss the retreats where we're together and then where we can interact and when we can, well, interact in a limited way because one retreats, but still interact because we're cooking for one another, we're serving one another, we're doing things for one another. And we, through that, we are practicing that path of going through to desist and cease. And we can see that it's certainly not boring. It's there's a sense of inclusion and spaciousness, but I also remember in my early days in the practice that we would do at the end of retreats, we would do circles. And I remember many times hearing people being so grateful and all that. And I was so absorbed in myself that I was like, I had no sense of gratefulness at all. I was just in my own little world, and I can see that also sometimes, yeah, and that I can testify that also it got transformed, and I do feel that now a lot. And not just on retreats. It's been fantastic to be able to sit in the morning with whoever was showing up. And, there was I saw recently a beautiful documentary on Netflix about an octopus. It's called My Octopus Teacher. I really highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's this guy who is very depressed and is in a bad place in his life, and he decides to do what was making him feel good when he was a kid, which is swimming in the sea. And so he does that every single day, and then he meets in his swim an octopus. He goes back every single day to see the octopus. And he starts to observe. He actually sees that octopus because he starts really, really to pay attention. Really to pay attention. And then he starts to develop a relationship with the octopus. And when the octopus, something bad happens to the octopus, he feels totally devastated. And then there's a feedback loop in his life, because where he originally he felt very depressed and had a hard time connecting with his wife and kid, he starts to have a better relationship with his son and wife. And there are two things that he said that I wrote them down because I thought it was really beautiful. He said, why do you go to the same place every day? Because he was going there, going back and back and back again, same place. He says, that's where you see the subtle differences. That's when you get to know the wild. So, of course, I was thinking of the wildflower. That's when you get to know the wild. You see the subtle difference. So we start with the attention. Building the attention, building this sense of collectedness. And then we start to see things. We start to see the subtle differences. We start to see the wild. I really like that. And the second quote second thing that this guy said that I wrote down was, when she, the octopus, taught me, what she, the octopus, taught me is to feel that you're part of this place, not a visitor. And that's a huge difference. And I feel that connects so well with our practice, this whole experience. Paying attention, feeling connected. And by feeling connected, the feeling that it's just not me alone on my cushion. And what I'm part of that. Not just, yeah, one guy who comes to a retreat and leaves and feel that, you know, I have no sense of gratefulness. That's a huge difference. It's a huge difference in terms of how it feels and how it's been translated in our daily life. Yeah, I think I want to stop here and hear what you have to say with all that. Yeah. Any comments, remarks?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello. What do you mean by wild?
Yeah. I don't know what he exactly meant by well, but what it resonated with me is the practice that we have of including everything and not and in, including meaning no discrimination. I'm thinking also about the forgot what is it? I send that to, there's a on there was one, a guy what's Roshi, do you remember the Finlay, the gardener, the punk gardener? It wasn't that, it was
Oh, the in Los Angeles?
the guy in Los Angeles. What was it? He was calling himself the well, anyway, I forgot. But there's this guy that does who is this gardener in Los Angeles called Ron Finley. And he lives in South LA, so really bad parts of LA, and he started to make gardens in areas where it was just sheer devastation. He was using parking lots and things like that, and he was also taking everything that he could find in order to grow plants. So he would find a suitcase and it's like, oh yeah, this is perfect, so we can put some ground on it, and it's like, perfect, yeah, suitcase, yeah, right. He would find another object and he would use it. And
Gangsta.
gangster, right, he was saying yeah, the gangster gardener. He calls himself the gangster gardener, and he said, gardening is gangster, is gangster. And so he was using it in a totally like the opposite way that we think of gangster, in the sense of really wild, that you can use anything. And it's like he said, air, this is fucking gangster. Because it's free, it's available, it's everywhere. It's like, so take it all, it's this is. And so he uses that as he uses that approach, like taking, no, non-discriminating mind, really, just totally embodied. So I find like this, yeah, the and this is very inspirational, this term wild, in the sense of, I mean, Roshi told the stories, like when she arrived for the first time in Portugal, and for many years, there was nothing. So now you're more structured than we are in France. You have bowls and all kinds of materials and all that, but it's like sometimes we don't, and sometimes we have to do with whatever is. And we can see also with this confinement that we have been super creative because of that also. Because of the constraints that we had, and we were able to, okay, this is the situation. What can we do? And from without it, having any ideas, and sometimes we, yeah, who would show up and how it's gonna work. And so this is wild. This is opening up to whatever is present and being creative with it, being playful with it. Yeah.
Would you say it's freedom? Well, yeah. Describe him.
Yeah, I read recently in some koans we talk about self-fulfilling samadhi. And I read like a commentary about the translation in Japanese. Where this self-fulfilling comes from this Japanese term, which actually means really the owns achieving own our own freedom. So this collectedness that I was talking about, the samadhi collectedness, is like that collectedness that actually liberates us and makes us free, in fact. So there's a huge sense of freedom. I don't know if you felt that, but for me, it's so clear that when I drop my ideas about things, when I go through desist and cease, there's so much freedom in there. And another word could be creativity also. I've been always super inspired by it's in one of the book from Bearing Witness from Bernie Glassman, where he mentions Hotai, who is this Japanese popular figure who has a little hut. And so he takes little objects and from his bag, depending on the situation, like a Santa Claus that would, you know, give presents, appropriate presents to depending on the kids that he has. And this is what we do. And when we are fixed on our tools, well, we respond in a fixed way. When we are free from any preconceived ideas, then we can be way more creative, way more free to use whatever tool we want to use, whatever feels appropriate. Yeah, Miguel.
I haven't heard everything, all your Dharma talk, but you were now talking about collectedness, samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's that you are talking about, but I'd remember in the Platform Sutra of Winning, Six Patria, he says that it's like the lamp that makes light. The samadhi, this collectedness, it's like the lamp. It's like when you are collected, or when there is a lamp, then there is light. It's the function of the lamp. So when you are collected, you see. It's that that you are talking about, more or less?
Yeah, that certainly relates, yeah, to that. And I really feel, for me, it's also interesting it's a great inspiration to see what the opposite of collectedness is and what it feels in the body not to feel collected. Yeah. And that sense of it leaks everywhere. I kind of like that image. It really it speaks to me. You know, it's I need to collect myself when I'm feels I'm all over the place, feeling like I'm all over the place. And how does that feel in the body, and how does that, what are the consequences in terms of the way I live my life?
But that collectedness that you are talking about, as the opposite of dispersion or all over the place, it's not the collectedness of concentration, it's a collectedness of oneness, isn't it? Everything is not all over the place, but at the same time, yes, it's all over the place, but you are one with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it feels there is a sense of stability in there, a sense of, and because you're stable, you're able to integrate, but it's not, you're not all, I mean, yeah, you're one, but it's, I mean, the experience is being one is, I don't know. Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. There's a, being collected is an ex, we're stable. We feel the sense, I feel there's a sense of stability in groundness, being grounded, being stable, and that means also being able to actually integrate all kinds of various elements but it's vast, and it can actually, when we're all over the place, in fact, we're not all over the place, we're very specific in our we're very picky on the things where we are dispersed. It feels like we're all over the place, but in fact, if we look closely, probably we're not that all over the place. It's very focused on, I mean, I'm thinking of addiction. This is where it leaks a lot, addiction. And we're not all over the place. It's very focused on one particular aspect. Yes, Rafael.
Hi, I was thinking about an experience that I had this morning that spoke to me about really what we were just talking, because talking about creativity. I had to check my email for something very specific, something I really needed. And when I turned on my computer, it then ended up popping up something different, something I wasn't expecting. Something that I really didn't meant to pay attention, but I paid attention because earlier in my week, I work as a graphic designer. And I had this project, and I thought, I made the mental notes, I have to look the work of this specific guy for my project. I wanted to use it as a reference, but I never actually did. And now I'm in the retreat, I'm not really wanting to think about work and about any of this, and it pops up. And I paid attention. Not really what surprised me. I paid attention not because I wanted to look at it and absorb it for the reference, but because after this day and a half of retreat, I could think of the image of his work was like, this is so boring. It's so much like everything I've ever seen. It's so much this box. And now when you were talking, it came to mind that experience because, you know, truly what we think about being sometimes original, you know, it's not really what, from where the creative process really comes, that it's, you know, having this freedom of mixing and matching things. When we are in one of these poles, these extremes, we are rather attaching ourselves to one specific thing. And we are not really considering all the options. It seems like you are more concentrated. It may seem like you are, because I think you can see it clearly. It's easier to encompass than everything. But the truth is that, I don't know if in English it has the same, but there's this saying in Portuguese that it says it's better one bird in hand than two flying. It's better to stick to one thing that is sure than, and we tend to hold on like that. But the truth is, especially in the creative process, it's the freedom of letting go and being able to contemplate all the opportunities. That's where you create space for creativity. It's actually bringing all the opportunities together, make everything whole by not holding into something very specific.
Yeah, thank you, Rafael. Yeah, I think, yeah, we can relate to that, to the necessity to let go in order to be creative. Yeah. I mean, I know that in my personal work, in terms of writing, if I don't let go, if I have specific ideas, it's hell. Yeah. But it's actually, it also relates to giving a Dharma talk also. It's hell if I start to have fixed ideas. Or if I want to do the best talk ever, or if even, you know, I really want to be useful, you know, even that thought can be a hindrance. So I think one of the strategy that has been used in the by Roshi and by her teacher and by many teachers is just warning you not too long in advance so that you can't think of it too much, you know. And it's hard to do that. It's really hard to, as we say, empty the cup, empty yourself, drop body on mind. It's really, really hard. Yes, Christine?
Yeah. I thought about when you started to talk, it made me think of the circle. And that's, it must be a little bit like that. You don't really, you're supposed to speak from the heart and not prepare. And it's not so easy always to do that. And I already have trouble sometimes to fill 5 minutes, you know, when I think you're supposed to talk, I don't know for how much time. So, yeah, I thought it's not easy. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, another moment where I feel we might feel that, waiting for an interview, you know, preparing what you're going to say. And it's very hard not to prepare, especially if you're working on a koan. It's like, this is the answer I'm going to give. And really, it can change. And it's a great opportunity. And also probably the fact that, you know, we don't want to look like a fool in front of our teacher. So we want to say something really, really smart. And of course, it's not working if we arrive with that mindset. It was a great, yeah, yes, Krisha, yeah. I can't hear you, yeah, right.
I'm sorry if I interrupt you, please finish.
No, go ahead.
Okay, my internet is unstable, so I don't know if you hear me well. Thank you, Joa, for your Dharma talk. I was thinking when I was listening to you about the arise, I don't know the order you told, arise, disease, and cease of the phenomena, and about the creative space, and you were using Amy Winehouse, that I like it very much. But I felt like, and it should be like that, I think, but when people talk and when I was listening to you, there's a seriousness, you know, about it's like a quality of the ceasing part of the phenomena. It felt like there's some kind of sorrow, I don't know. I felt like that was my perception in letting go, and this is the opposite, not the opposite, it doesn't matter, but this is different from what we actually experience when we let the ceasing of a phenomena be. I think what you are saying, or in an artistic way, but it's really important for creation, I think, all as a larger concept, not just artistic, like if we let go and hold on to what we think we just want to feel this, or we hold on to what we think we don't want to feel this, there's a space there where you can, you know, be creative enough to, to put yourself more space to, in the case of the relationships, to not create division or separation. In the case of, I don't know, for example, economy, not just think of the continuous profit, but in the sustainable, you know, the space that we need to be creative, to be with each other in a place where we are not holding on to whatever we think it's really important for us. And sometimes what I've, and that gives us a lot of freedom, as you say, and gives us the opportunity to be creative. But I also think that in that freedom, there's a lot of bliss. There's a bliss, perhaps a samadhi bliss I've experienced in retreats with you. But this is technical for me, so forget it. I don't mean nothing special with this. And that doesn't connect directly when we are talking about it, you know? It's like I was watching you, and not just you, Joa, and there's a serious, you look serious when you are talking, but when you are talking about the experience of it, your face enlightens, you know? Yours and the other person that I see talking, me myself, when I talk about seizing the need to let go as a contraction. But when I actually let go, that's not what I experience. And I don't know really what I'm trying to say, but I think it's some kind of important to bring that to the theoretical discourse of the ceasing part, okay, it's not for us to be fool ourselves as a kind of difficulty, of course, it's true. It can be hurtful, etc. But there's a big freedom in there and a big peace, big bliss and peace, I think. That's what I experience when I have that kind of experiences. Somehow I forget and I repeat the whole process. So thank you very much. I liked very much your investigation team that you brought. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's true. I mean, what I hear from you is also, it's true that we need to say something to convey the experience, but it's true that it can end up being very mental and therefore being very serious. And this is the great tool of the koans. It really tries to bypass, you know, that intellectual aspect, so we don't get too involved. And just, and another thing, I've been extremely happy recently to discover a lot of sutras that are talking about joy. It made me really happy to see that this is, as I was mentioning with the King Pasenadi, this is like really, this is the expression of it. And joy has nothing to do with being intellectual or not. And so that's putting it at the core, at the center of our practice. I find it's, not that we're not going to experience pain anymore, but like seeing it as a manifestation of awakening, our ability to go through, desist, and cease. I'm aware of the time. I think Seu wanted to say something. I know that Lara raised her hand, but yes. Seu, yeah.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah.
I have a message for Amy Roshi. Are you there? okay. We know that in 2 days you have a birthday, and we decide to anticipate a little bit to celebrate together your birthday. it's in a few seconds you receive posts, you can see